Nice to have Bobby Jones back here with us on Sports Byline. 12 years in professional basketball, most of those years spent in a Sixers uniform, 4 years, of course, in a Nuggets uniform. Good evening to you, Bobby. Nice to have you with us again here on Sports Byline.
Thank you, Ron. Good to be with you.
How did you end up at North Carolina playing college ball for Dean Smith?
Well, I was not a highly recruited player back when I was in high school, and North Carolina was among about 10 schools in the area that was looking at me. And I, growing up here in Charlotte, North Carolina, my dad had taken me to a lot of Carolina and Davidson games, and really had spent a couple of summers at the Coach Smith camp, his basketball camp, and I just really liked the coaching situation there. Coach Smith obviously is a great coach, and when I went for my official visit, I enjoyed the meeting the players. They really seemed like a home, close-knit atmosphere, and I really liked going there. Looking forward to that.
Your dad, of course, a big influence, as I would suppose many fathers are on their sons. He played at Oklahoma, didn't he?
Yes, he sure did, Ron. He really wanted me to go to Oklahoma, and my brother at the time was playing there. And so it was a tough choice for me, too. But I'm kind of a homebody, so I want to stay a little bit closer to where I grew up.
What did you look for in the experience at college, both from an academic and also from a basketball standpoint? At that particular time back in the 60s, what were you looking for?
Well, you know, I really was looking for a place where I felt like I would fit in and I would be able to use some of the talents that I had. And I really was not a really good high school player. I was a good high school player. I wasn't, a highly sought-after player, and I felt like by going to North Carolina, I could increase the skill level there, and it was a liberal arts school that offered me a wide variety of things. And I really at the time did not know what I was interested in studying, so I took a lot of history courses and a lot of psychology courses, and ended up getting my major in psychology.
Yeah, Dean said something about you that I found very interesting. He says he has a rare ability to divorce himself from the games after they end. He is a man at peace with himself. It's what I term internal affirmation, and Bobby, it's strong. What did he mean by that?
Well, I don't know. I think, when I played, one of the things that I wanted to do was, as I finished the game, you know, as a Christian also, just to say to myself, I've got to play as hard as I can to honor the Lord with the talents he's given me. When it ends, I've got to evaluate what I did and what I didn't do, and when I do that, and it doesn't take that long, sometimes games run through your mind, but as I process that, I can say, yeah, I should have done this. I didn't do this very well. I did this okay. And I can checkpoint those in my mind and then go on and forget about it and not worry about whether I, because you can't change it, and there's not a whole lot of reason to celebrate a whole lot of it because you got another game coming up generally in the next day or so.
One thing that I do know in talking to athletes back during that particular time when they were in college is that they didn't look at college as a means to an end as far as a pro career. They were looking at it as an opportunity to get an education and get on with their life if they weren't able to play basketball. Did you look at college basketball as being a means to an end?
Well, no, I didn't. I just, I felt like, like you said, I was looking to get my education. It was a scholarship opportunity to pay for my education. And in fact, Ron, back in those days, I remember on draft day, Coach Smith said, listen, you're going to get drafted today. Come by after classes, and we'll tell you where you went. And it was just that casual. And I was ended up being picked fifth by Houston. And as I came back that afternoon, nobody called me. Nobody said anything. I just, they told me that. And then the next day I read it in the paper, and that was it. No big deal.
It's been referred to, let me first ask this question. Where did the interest in playing defense come from? Where was that seed planted?
Well, I think the seed was planted when I was in high school because when I was like as a sophomore, I was not a very good player. I couldn't shoot the ball very well. I didn't handle the ball very well, and so I found that I gained some success when I could block a shot or get a steal or a rebound and kick it out quickly. And that's really where I sort of started it. But I think my freshman year when I got to Carolina and they started to teach me how to anticipate on defense, give help side defense, and reinforce the positiveness of double teaming, blocking a shot, and doing those kind of things, that is really where the seed, I think, got watered and came to fruition.
Another player who was an outstanding defensive player in the NBA, Dennis Johnson, was with us recently. Bobby, I want you to listen to what he had to say about playing defense in the NBA.
Okay. It's just like Michael Jordan scoring 50 points. You get that much of a thrill out of it if you stop somebody, whether it's at the end of a game, during the middle of the game, or during the whole game. It's a challenge when somebody is able to, score so many points. And I've had many points scored on me, but I've always known and been confident in my defense to say, well, okay, he has 27 or 28 points now, but we're coming to the end of the game, and I've chased him all over the court, and I know he's tired. And I play 48 minutes all the time. So I know when we get down to that last minute and he has to take that shot, he's going to be, his arms and legs and body is going to be so dead dog tired that I'm going to win this battle.
One thing I know, I always hear everybody that ever played defense use the word challenge when I talk to them about the attitude of playing. And I, what I think they mean, Bobby, and correct me if I'm wrong about this, is that it's a personal challenge. It's a pride thing for people that play defense. It won't show up in the stats. It won't show up in the boxes or anything, but it is a personal challenge.
Oh, I agree, absolutely. It is a personal challenge, and there's a stubbornness that has to be taken on the personality of the defender to say, this guy's not going to score on me. And if he does score, he's going to have to hit a heck of a shot to score, to get those 2 points, and he's going to have to earn it and have to work hard. And as Dennis said, you know, by the end of the game, you know, good things will happen if I continue with that pressure that I'm applying. And one thing that I like to do when I was playing is I would sort of wait till the end of the game, and I wouldn't try to do all the little tricks. I wouldn't try to get a steal every time. I wouldn't try to hold a little bit extra until right when I thought I was lulling the guy to sleep and we needed to make a play, and then I would take a chance that I had maybe had not taken early in the game, and it seemed to work out that it would catch some people off guard at times.
You were named in a new book that just came out as one of the 100 greatest players. And in the book, let me quote from it. It says, Bobby Jones not only played great defense, he played gentlemanly defense. And then it goes on to talk about your deep-seated Christian values. And a quote from you said, if I have to play defense by holding on, that's when I quit. If I have to use an elbow to get position, then I'm going to have to settle for another position. And if I foul or if the official makes a mistake, there's no use screaming about it. It won't change things or make me happier. How can one play the game as physically challenging as it is and be so under control emotionally?
Well, I think a couple of reasons for that. One, I didn't have the strength to really hold anybody or push anybody out of the way. I had to use some quickness that really, again, was developed, I think, at North Carolina. But also, I found that really working with the officials that these are the top guys at any level of officiating in any sport. And my experience with these guys over a period of 12 years was, if I was honest with them and didn't try to con them, then I generally got the benefit of the doubt, because there's a skepticism among officials. Well, this guy's, you know, he's holding off, or he's trying to get this call, he's trying to get this. And I felt like in a way that some offensive players get certain calls or let things go their way, I generally, if there was a charge, a block situation, I usually came out on the good end of that.
One thing that I've never understand, Bobby, is that there's always a place for a player that plays defense in the NBA. You can have a very long and prosperous career in the NBA today, but having said that, you don't see a lot of players that really work at that part of the game. Why is that?
You know, I don't know, Ron. That's a great question. You know, most, like you said, most clubs, when they keep 12 guys, I mean, they don't need 12 scorers. They need a couple of guys who can go in there and do something that will help turn the game around, and that's really what defense is all about. When I was playing with David Thompson early, and then later with Julius, we had guys who could score. And if a player today could recognize what he needs to do to help his team win, that guy, he's a gold mine. I mean, he'll play for 10 years, even if he has moderate ability, because coaches understand that's what it takes to win. You don't need 5 guys to score, you know, with the ball.
Were there any players that gave you particularly a hard time when you played them defensively, or was it just about everybody?
Well, there's a lot of guys. You know, in the early days, George McGinnis was very difficult. And then Julius, when I was playing against him in the old ABA. Coming into the NBA, Bernard King was a guy that really I had trouble ever affecting his shot. He was one of the few guys that I felt like I could not really affect his shot unless I actually blocked it or deflected it in some way. McHale and Bird, obviously, from Boston, were very difficult matchups for me. You know, when I had to play Magic or Maurice Lucas or somebody either quicker or bigger than I was, it was a little bit of a challenge. But we played pretty good help defense at Philly, so it gave me an opportunity to take some chances.
Just an observation, and again, not having played the game at that level, I would believe that when you're trying to play defense against somebody in the NBA or professional basketball, what you have to do is have some early success so that you frustrate them, because once you frustrate them, then you're knocking them off their rhythm.
That's true, Ron, and you also have to get in their mind a little bit. You have to let them know that you can do certain things. And one of the things that I would try to do, especially when I would come up against a rookie who was a pretty good offensive player, I'd waste a foul or two going to block a shot. And, he may fake me out or whatever, but I'd always try to get a piece of that first shot he ever took. and let him know that I had some ability to try to get that ball, and let him think next time, well, is he going to block it? Is he, you know, do I have to give a fake? Am I going to? And it seemed to work out that way, to try to get in somebody's mind.
Bobby, hold on just a second. Very special guest with us and you here on Sports Byline, Bobby Jones. I'll open up the lines in a couple minutes, but I want to talk to Bobby about a couple of other things. 1-800-878-7529. Got more of you on Sports Byline.